Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Rick Ryer in for Glenn Moberg. Today on Route 51, we look back at the big regional news stories of 2013 and look ahead to what we think might be the big developments for North Central Wisconsin in the coming year. Our guests on today's Reporters Roundtable are Robert Menser, opinion page and community conversation editor for the Wausau Daily Herald, Ken Krall, news director for WXPR Public Radio in Rhinelander, and Amy Flugsop, anchor and reporter for WSAW-TV News Channel 7 of Wausau. And we'd like to hear from you as well. What do you think the most significant news stories of the past year were? What do you think lies ahead in 2014? Do you have any predictions for the elections that will take place, including the expected race for governor between Scott Walker and Mary Burke? By the end of the year, will President Obama's health care reform law hurt or help Democrats or the Republicans? What do you think the fate will be for the proposed Pinocchio Hills iron mine? Are there other stories that you think are significant that the state and national media are ignoring? Our lines are open, 800-780-9742. You can call us, 800-780-9742. Or you can also send us a note on Facebook and Twitter at Route 51 Show. Here's the news. Thank you for joining us, Amy, Rob, and Ken. And Ken Krall, I'd like to talk a little bit about, start off the show today with a discussion about the Pinocchio Hills mine. From your perspective, will the mine go forward or will it get bogged down in legal challenges?
It's going to get bogged down in legal challenges. I'm certain of that. It will go forward. How far it goes remains to be seen, I guess. But it's still very early in the process. There's a lot of heat at this point, and it's going to keep going and growing as it goes forward. But it's still fairly early in the process. There's a lot of public debate yet to come.
Rob, Amy?
Well, there's a lot of, so this obviously was a major political topic, right? A topic of political debate. But there's a couple of different dimensions to it, right? Because there is the political question. Like it or don't like it, it's sort of settled. We had elections, and it was a major topic in elections in 2010, 11, and 12. But now there's a legal dimension and there's an environmental dimension. A lot of this will rest on judgments made by DNR scientists, and that's I can talk about politics. I don't really know the science. I'm not really qualified to weigh in on that.
Yeah, our viewers at News Channel 7, I know they see both sides of it. They see the jobs coming, which is great for our economy. But then they see the environmental effects. We don't know what this is going to do down the road to, our whole state's environmental facet. But I think the thing is, too, it's one of those things you never want it in your own backyard, but yet we want to move forward with things. So I think that's kind of a big problem with people, too.
Well, I see the other issue with that is how it affects the Bad River Tribe. Ken, what is your perspective up there?
Well, it's pretty clear the Bad River Tribe doesn't want anything to do with this mine, and they feel that they're on some pretty solid ground in terms of environmental damage, and it's going to, I think that side of the story is going to become more and more a focus as we go forward, because they do have water rights that need to be respected. And that's going to be a flashpoint, I think, coming up in the next year or so as more and more of this debate continues.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, they have legal rights, and it's going to be adjudicated by the legal system, but that takes a long time. That's a long process, and I'm not a legal expert, but I do think that they have some strong claims, as Ken says.
Governor Walker was here in Rhinelander yesterday and was asked about, one reporter said, "Are we going to see a mine?" And his statement basically was, he said, well, first off, he said he was largely confident it would happen. But he said all he did was put in process or put in place the process for a potential mine, leaving it to the DNR to decide. That was his statement. And so that's from his perspective, I think, where it's coming from. But the opponents certainly see it as kind of the system has been rigged. And so I think you're going to hear more and more and more of that as we go forward.
Moving on to another issue, and we can certainly come back to the Pinocchio Hills, and you can also call us today at 800-780-9742 to talk about an issue that is important to you that we've may not be talking about today on that we've had planned, and if you'd like to bring that up, certainly give us a call. One of the issues or bigger news stories that happened in Marathon County earlier in the year was the jail controversy. Huge controversy, and we're still hearing the effects of what happened at the jail. And Rob or Amy, if you want to fill us in, again, give us a brief background on where things are headed right now.
Sure. The attack on two officers within the Marathon County Jail left one of them hospitalized and seriously injured, and this triggered a sort of a review process that uncovered a whole bunch of problems, management problems, administration problems in the within the jail. The communication systems were all wrong, inadequate. There were bad security procedures. The jail was understaffed and had been understaffed for years. The county, in response to this, appointed a citizens review panel to look into this, and they came back with a number of concrete recommendations, some of which were acted on rather quickly, fixing communication systems, more cameras in the jail, getting tasers for the corrections officers, and others of which were more long-term type projects. It's the sort of thing where, in a sense, it affects a small population, but in another way, it affects the whole population's, the whole public's sort of perception of law enforcement and sense of confidence in law enforcement. And so the rebuilding of the jail absolutely was a big story this year, and it was the reason that the Daily Herald gave our Person of the Year award to Marathon County Chief Deputy Chad Billub, who really was instrumental in working with the review panel and getting some of those reforms made.
Mm-hmm. Amy?
Yeah, I think, excuse me, I think, like you said, it was a big deal. It does affect such a small portion of our community, but yet everybody as a whole, I know one of the topics, too, with it is the overcrowding. I mean, we've been talking about that for years in the process of trying to get a new jail facility here in the area. What's the best way to go about it? I know a lot of our inmates right now are being shipped to other counties because we don't have room for them here, and that's a concern in safety for, you know, our people working there. And like Rob just said, you know, I think a lot of those things that they've implemented right now, you know, we're on the right track, it looks like, it seems like, and you know, some of them are going to be long term, we're not going to see right away, you know, you can't see change overnight in a situation like this. So
Ken, we've talked a little bit about the Pinocchio mine as part of one of the things that you're following up in the north. What other stories are you following right now that have taken quite a bit of your time over the past number of months?
Before I get to that, I want to add a little bit on the jail. The new administrator is a person who originally was from Oneida County up here, Sandra Ledoux Ives, and she and I were in a group together, a leadership group, and she is a quality individual, and I was very happy to see that she took over down there, and I think you'll see good things out of Sandra. As far as the issues, the other issues that are really at the forefront, one of them deals with how many trees should be in the Schwamigan-Nicolet National Forest. That's really coming to – it's been a kind of a bubbling issue up here for a long time. The folks at the in the Great Lakes Timber Professionals and some of the others up here want to see a larger amount of trees allocated to be cut within the forest. And there's been kind of a long debate with the U.S. Forest Service about – how many, you know, just how many plots, how many trees do we cut? It's a big impact on the businesses up here. The logging industry still has a lot of jobs up here, and they're finding it harder and harder to find trees for sawmills and so on. So This is a big issue that I don't think has been seen much in the rest of the state, but it's certainly an issue up here involving many industries and the government offices and so forth. So it's one of the issues that we've been following fairly closely.
It's a fascinating issue, and the Gannett, Wisconsin's investigative team did a series on that same issue, and so I have some familiarity largely through those reports. And can I ask you, what do you see as the what is the obstacle to it? As I understand it, the not even anywhere close to what the EPA recommended level of harvesting is happening. You know, so it seems like. It almost seems like, well, couldn't we fix this? What do you see as the obstacles there?
A lot of it, and from what I can gather, I've never gotten a firm yes, no, or maybe answer from anyone. A lot of it comes from Washington, D.C. Apparently, their policy is this is how much, you know, that should be in cut. But another factor, actually, there's a couple of things working. Whenever they've put up stands that could be opened up for cutting, they immediately several groups will file suit to try and halt the logging. They're opposed to logging, and it takes a long time to get those lawsuits settled. And when they do, then they can open it up. But it's kind of a process that's being slowed down by the legal system. And also, if you talk to the Forest Service people, you know. The loggers and the folks in the forest products industry look at it as we need the trees for our purposes. But the Forest Service people will say, you know, this is a multi-use kind of land. There's 1.5 million acres in the Schwamigan-Nicolet, and there's people who like to hike. There's people who simply like to be out in the wilderness, you know, where there's no roads and this type of thing. It's not just simply let's open up how many, you know, acres we can cut. It's a multi-use situation, and that's what they will tell me, is that there's more to it than simply logging. But of course, the other groups, the groups who want more, say that's not true. That the sustainable logging that you know is being advocated certainly won't do that kind of damage in as much territory as that is. So again, it's one of those questions that right now is still kind of hanging.
Yeah, it's just so it's just so weird that So, yeah, you have to balance a lot of different factors, but the EPA has done that. There exists a recommended harvest level and not over this point. If you were going – if the loggers were recommending that they want to go to 150% or 200% of the recommended level, then you would say, well, that doesn't, you know, maybe that's too much. But when they're at 50% of what the EPA recommends, it seems like it doesn't seem unreasonable to want to increase that, but that's just me.
It's one of those issues where when you ask a direct question, it goes in about four different directions. It's very difficult to find someone to do a yes-no kind of a response to it.
We have a caller calling from Marshfield. Bob has a question about mining. Bob, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I can only agree that we need mining and jobs in northern Wisconsin. The thing that disturbs me is if you look at these mining companies, I looked at Gogebic Mining. I don't know if they're still the current one, but Gogebic Mining was owned by Cleary Mining. Cleary Mining was owned by Cleary Holdings. If they get into trouble, gee, the first corporation is broke. And go after the second, gee, the second corporation is broke, and for some legal reason they can't get to the third. I wouldn't let them mine until the parent company assumes responsibility for any adverse outcome.
I guess it gets to the legal morass, right? The question of legal morass. How do you, who is ultimately responsible if there are some of the environmental impacts that are predicted? And it's a puzzle.
Thanks, Bob, for your call.
Thank you. If I could add, there was another mine, that was proposed here, and a lot of people weren't really aware of it too much. In the town of Lynn in western Oneida County, there was some county forest land that is owned by the county that has a sizable deposit of copper and zinc. It's not iron ore. And the Oneida County Board this year decided not to go ahead with it because there was a lot of opposition to it for a number of different reasons. No matter what happens, it's a complete trade-off. Do you want the metal or do you want to lose the environment? You know, it's one of the trade-offs that you have to talk about before you come to a decision on it. So it's an issue that is long-term, and it's not going to go away for a while.
You're listening to Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guests today are Rob Menser from the Wausau Daily Herald, Ken Kroll from WXPR in Rhinelander, and Amy Fluxop from WSAW News Channel 7. We'll be back right after this.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include Stevens Point Area Co-op, Peninsula Music Festival, and Import Auto Clinic. You, too, can help ensure the future of WPR with your business sponsorship. Find out more at wpr.org/sponsor.
Support also comes from Wausau's Woodson Art Museum, enigmatic glass artwork by Wisconsin native David Hutchthausen, along with contemporary jewelry and vessels fashioned from precious metals and stones, comprise two new exhibitions on view through January 19th. More at lywam.org.
It's Good News Week. Someone's dropped a bomb somewhere, contaminating atmosphere and blackening the sky.
You're listening to Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about the top news stories of 2013 and looking ahead into 2014. And let's just do that a little bit about 2014. We have some elections coming up, and one of those elections is concerning the 7th Congressional District with Congressman Sean Duffy and Kelly Westland, who is from Ashland and who has thrown her hat in the ring. And let's start with you, Amy, and if you had to talk a little bit about that race, what you see coming ahead, and we'll kind of go around the table and get our views on that.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if anybody else does decide to throw their hat in the ring right now. She's the only one looking to go against Sean Duffy. I know a lot of people have had a lot to say. A lot of our viewers have had a lot to say about him, saying, you know, maybe he's becoming too moderate, a little too conservative. You know, everybody seems to have their own opinion, but it'll be interesting to see where things go. I know a lot of it, you know, with the cutting of food stamps to people and things like that. And I know that's a big issue with a lot of people in our area, the farm bill, things like that. I know he's weighed in on that a little bit as well. So we'll see.
Rob.
Sean Duffy's going to be a hard political opponent. If I'm handicapping, I would say Kelly Westland begins as an underdog. Part of that is due to redistricting, which made the 7th Congressional District significantly more Republican than it was before Duffy was elected. And a part of it is due to Sean Duffy being a skilled politician and somebody who's been very visible and become very well known in the district. And part of it is going to, you know, that in a midterm election, the electorate tends to be a little older and a little more Republican. And Duffy, being a member of the Financial Services Committee, is going to have a lot of money to spend on the campaign. So it will be an interesting campaign, and it'll depend, as all things do, right, on how the economy is going and the sort of political fortunes of Republicans in 2014. It'll be a good one to watch.
Ken, what's the perspective up in the North?
I agree. You know, a lot of that redistricting happened up here where Duffy's district, or the 7th Congressional, I should say, became many more counties, towns, and so on, came into the 7th when Stevens Point in that area went out to another district. And I agree with Rob. It did tilt the district way more toward the Republican side. So he's coming in along with the. Of course, we all know that incumbency has its own, you know, merits. You know, they. It's hard to get a sitting person out of office, and so I would have to agree with Rob that it's going to be a long haul for the Democrats to, you know, fight the winning fight in this race.
Well, there has been a lot of talk. I mean, both of you talked about redistricting, and is there any sense that there will be some changes or efforts to change the way Wisconsin draws its legislative districts? Do you see us moving to a system like Iowa's bipartisan panel?
No, there's no chance. No, this is something that as an editorial writer I've written about many times, and it's actually frustrating to see to the extent that anyone knows about this issue, everyone knows that it needs to change. The system that we have is terrible. It's simply not right for politicians to be able to choose their own voters and draw their own, you know, draw up their own districts. And it was Republicans, but it could just as easily have been Democrats. It doesn't matter. And clearly the Iowa nonpartisan system works better and is more technically minded rather than politically minded. And yet, you know, we've had a statewide editorial boards across the state have called for this. Voters, there were some public records requests that showed that voters flooded politicians' offices with calls and emails on this. And still, there's a total resistance to even holding a hearing on the bill.
Well, you're asking the people who most benefit from it to change that system. And it's going to be nearly impossible. It doesn't matter which party you follow. I mean, both of them have done it to the advantage of their own party. So you're asking, you know, the two parties to kind of be something else, and I don't think you're going to see that. There has to be, I think this is truly an issue where the public has to simply say this has got to change, and it's got to come from the bottom up.
And it's hard, you know, it's hard because it does feel like it's a process issue, and it's hard for people to feel engaged on something like this, but it really is important. It really shapes what is possible in the political arena. Do you hear from this from any of your viewers? Does anyone care about this?
I mean, I'm sure everybody cares about it a little bit. Like you said, you know, they're using it for their own favor. So if you're a Democrat and you want the Republicans out, of course you're going to be against it. But I don't know. It's a hot button issue, I think. Yeah, but in a sense, I don't know if people really know too much about the surrounding ways that other states are handling the situation and things like that.
I think in the way the best thing we can hope for is that we is that the political pressure that exists gets enough politicians on record believing this so that they can't sort of weasel out of it if they're in charge one day.
Mm-hmm. Amy, what are some of the issues that you particularly are following this past year and going ahead into 2014?
I think one of our big issues with our viewers has been we've seen a lot of really gruesome animal abuse cases lately in the area, and especially in just the last couple of weeks, we've had some pretty horrific things to have to tell our viewers about many people. It struck a chord with many people, the Brown County dairy farm abuse case where Mercy for Animals went in and kind of had some pretty horrific sights to see, and I know it was hard for a lot of our viewers to watch that, but you know, we took a lot of heat by showing those pictures or videos to people, but you know, our reason for doing it is it draws attention. If we wouldn't have shown that and we would have just read that story and put up a full screen graphic and not showed you what was happening, you know, you kind of glaze over it just a bit. And so I know we took some heat a little bit for that, but you know, that's our reasoning behind that. And just in the last, like I said, 2 weeks, that was one. And then we've had, the kitten killing, the alleged kitten killing, and then also the dog found up north with some duct tape and rope around its neck. You know, what's possessing people to do this? And it's kind of a hard thing to wrap your mind around a little bit. And we had the one that really, really pinged high on our social media site was Paco the dog, the Stratford man who was accused of duct taping his dog up and leaving it in the yard. And then he blamed someone else. And that just started circulating on Facebook like wildfire. And people love their animals, and, you know, wrapping their mind around how somebody can do that is just unreal. Do you guys deal with that at all? I know you probably don't hit too much with
sure.
that.
Oh, sure. No,
oh,
sure.
Oh, yeah. There's been cases up here in Forest County recently, a couple of cases. It's not just an isolated incident, I don't believe.
Yeah, and there is something about those stories that does get your heartstrings, I guess. And sometimes people point out that, in a sense, there's a greater response to that than there is for a child abuse case.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about.
And it is. I mean, it is true, but I guess it's just the sense of a total defenseless animal. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it is pretty disgusting.
And while this story has nothing to do with animal abuse, the number one story on our website to this date, after we redid our website, keep fairly close numbers on who's hitting on what stories. The number one story so far is when some people saw a moose walking around in Rhineland mm-hmm. a while
right.
back.
Yep.
And it
great story. Awesome story.
For a while.
I watched that video a couple of times. That was on Facebook.
Yep.
Speaking of Facebook and social media, how has social media affected how you report stories or follow up and follow through on stories throughout the year?
Hugely. I mean, there's the element of just wanting to be where readers are and wanting mm-hmm. to communicate in the way that people want to hear about the news and stuff. There's also a true gauge of what readers are responding to. And lastly, there's also a risk that you, you know, because this is one metric, but there are others, right? There are other ways of measuring value in journalism and so on. And you want to follow things that readers care about and are going to share and are going to comment on, but you also want to be a little careful that you're not just chasing those mm-hmm. Facebook likes all the time. That's one important thing. It's not the only important thing.
Okay.
and I think you have to always keep in mind that, you know, you have to keep in mind the business that you're in. You know, you have radio, print, and TV today, mm-hmm. and there's a tendency to always go in the direction of the social media, but of course, as we all know, you have to vet those things. You know, the information, you know, you have to kind of look at all the facts.
Sure.
And sometimes on social media, you wonder about some of the things that you see. You know, is this accurate? Of course, you like to follow it. But mm-hmm. at the same time, what I'm beginning to realize is that the websites that are most trusted are, guess what? It's the websites for the newspapers, the television stations, the radio stations, and so on. So I think that's a danger that all of us could fall into, is that let's just follow the social media. That's where the folks are. But at the same time, you know, you don't want to lose the integrity of what you're doing.
Totally true. Totally mm-hmm. agree.
Rob, your editorial this morning about the WASA school music controversy. And, Ken, I want you to tack on this a little bit later on to get your perspective. But what's going on?
in October... After a lengthy review process, the WASA School District announced a policy that would have limited the ability of school music groups to perform religious songs. Shorthand for that might be, they were trying to kill Christmas, Rick. No, not really. That's a joke. But that was the way it was perceived, and it was a massive blow up in the community of WASA, and really it nationally to some extent got some mm-hmm. attention. Part of that was because the group, the Master Singers, this WASA West singing group that has received a lot of accolades, was so sort of beloved by the community, and people wanted to go to these Christmas concerts and did not like the prospect that they could be changed. So as a result of that, following the controversy, the school board reinstated the old policy, sort of overturned the new limits, and also launched an investigation, an outside investigation about what happened to figure out if there was any, I guess, wrongdoing or what led to it to try to stop it from happening. They have finished the report. The school board has received the report, but we can't look
mm-hmm.
at it.
Not yet. We're waiting.
We're waiting. They went into a closed session on Monday, saying that they might release the report at the end of the meeting. Then they said maybe they would release it on Tuesday. And then they said we're gonna wait, and we don't know when we're gonna release it. There's a legal review, and the school board has announced that they're gonna have another meeting on this coming Monday to figure out what they're gonna do, I guess. In the meantime, it's just rumors running rampant. In the meantime, everyone is speculating what must be in this report that's so bad.
I think that's what's really stirring and made this really a hot-button issue with our viewers, too, is that, you know, it was kept so quiet for so long, and then that just let the rumors swirl, like you said, to start with, and then it all kind of came out. I know I was out on the East Coast when this story broke, and I heard it out there, and I was like, wow, what is going on in WASA when I'm gone? So, you know, I know that's a big deal. And here's the other spin on it, too. Dr. Kathleen Williams told us that she was actually getting threats on her and her family because of this decision. Now, if these are people who are upset about taking religious music out of the program, I know that kind of spins the question of, you know, isn't that a bit extreme if you're coming at it from a religious perspective? I mean, I know not everybody agrees with the religious music in the schools, and that's fine. But for those that do, and now you're the ones upset and you're coming at this direction, it's a little ugly.
It's not a very Christian response.
No, exactly.
No, I think
it's
that's
a little
fair
ugly.
To say. Yeah. But it does get to the passion that was stirred from it, and partly it was because people perceived it as mm-hmm. an attack on religious expression. I think that was a major factor. I think it was more than that too. I think it was it was also tied up with administrators who wanted to boss around teachers who are professionals who should be treated as professionals, and also as I said, just the sort of bond that the community had with this the singing group and these holiday concerts. So,
Ken, are you getting any perspective from up in Rhineland or in northern Wisconsin on this particular issue?
Not a peep.
Not a peep.
It's been a Wausau issue. Haven't seen or heard anything in that regard. It seems like everybody seems happy with what's going on up here.
Well, we had Sarah Palin.
Yes, she did
visit
Wausau
as a result. Yes.
Yeah, that was interesting.
It's biggest story of 2013. Yeah, no, not really.
Well, there was a really interesting environmental story that came out not too long ago. It's a relationship between the city of Adams and Global Environmental Infrastructure Technologies Corporation, which is building a factory in the community, installing solar energy for the school district, and plans to build a floating solar power plant that is intended to remove the algae from Lake Peatonwell. Will Adams become America's new green energy capital? I'll throw that out there.
I hope so. That sounds
cool.
Great, right? Right.
Yeah.
I mean, the it really is exciting to see companies pursuing new technologies and trying to make a niche in these sort of environmentally friendly technologies that could also serve to create jobs and grow the local economy. I mean, that's awesome. That'd be great. Some of these things work out, some don't, right? It is exciting to see the movement on those types of initiatives.
Yeah, I'm personally not really familiar with this story, but if you look at it, like Rob just said, as a whole, you know, you've got a new opportunity here and might as well give it a whirl if you're not hurting anything in the process. If you're doing some solar energy, I think that's great. You know, a lot of us, you know, here at Newman, they've got a project going on. You know, a lot of people are switching to those types of forms of energy. And, you know, if it's going to create some new jobs along the way, why not? We welcome that to Wisconsin.
Yeah, and water issues are so mm-hmm. are so huge and probably likely to grow. We came through years and years of drought here, and so mm-hmm. some of these questions about algae patterns and so on. I mean, that's a major problem. And if someone can, if these floating doohickeys work, somebody's going to be very rich from
yeah.
that. And I think that's great.
Well, interesting. If I can interject, a couple of our volunteers up here, of course, in the Northwoods, power sometimes is kind of spotty. And solar energy, believe it or not, is becoming a couple of our volunteers are 100% off the grid because, of the power issues. And so I think you're seeing, you were talking about issues in 2014, I think you're going to see more and more alternative energy become more of a mainstream kind of energy.
We're talking with Rob Benser from the Wausau Daily Herald, Ken Krall from WXBR, and Amy Flusop from News Channel 7 here in Wausau about the stories of 2013 and what's coming up down the pipe for 2014. If you'd like to join the conversation, we'd love to have you. Our phone number is 800-780-9742. Again, that's 1-800-780-9742. You can also post a comment on Facebook or Twitter at Route 51 Show. And Ken, on a related topic, you are interested in talking about invasive species and how that's affecting the woods and waters of northern Wisconsin.
It's an issue that maybe the folks in central Wisconsin might not be as aware of, but it does affect them if they come up here. It has deeply concerned the county boards up here, the tourism, the chamber people to a great degree because it has become an invasion of things that are now starting to affect our waters. Eurasian water milfoil, and it goes on and on. And every year there seems to be more. Now the terrestrial plants, as there's more people with vehicles out in the woods and so on, there's been more and more terrestrial plants out in the woods that are invasive. And what I find as an interesting point to this is the cost of keeping this under control. The lake associations up here have done an outstanding job of policing the boat landings and so forth so that people can't just drop their boat from lake to lake to lake and spread these things. But they've been doing it largely with a minimal amount of money from Madison. Kind of a volunteer effort with some money, but it's becoming an issue. For instance, if you live in Wausau and you come up here someday, unless they can stem the tide of some of this, you're going to find these beautiful lakes up here clogged with stuff that just isn't good, not native to the lakes and so on. And it's one of the things that I think most listeners to this show might not be aware of what's happening up here. There are people doing incredible effort up here. Each county now has some sort of person who coordinates controlling invasive species. And it as more and more of these free trade agreements come in and these species come in from who knows where, and it's going to become, I think, an issue that finally will hit the radar screen of a lot of people who might not now even think of it.
Are we talking both about plants and animals and certain kinds of fish?
Mainly marine or water invasives.
Okay.
And also plants. There are huge tracts of land in some of the forests up here that are now almost completely taken over with buckthorn and some of these other invasives. And it's I don't think people quite are – this is an issue that, you know, I think will become more and more of an issue as suddenly, you know, your lake home, which was on this pristine lake at one time, suddenly has a lake that's clogged full of stuff that, you know, you can't boat on it very well. The fishing has died off. You know, it's going to have an impact long-term on property values up here if it keeps going as it's going.
Yeah, that's a good one, a good emerging issue,
mm-hmm.
Ken, because the economic impact is huge. I mean, it
sure.
Should be potentially very big.
Well, another issue that has been quite concerned here, I know at least in central Wisconsin, I'm not sure where it is in the northern part of our region, it's the growing heroin epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Wisconsin Public Radio, we did a six-part series on that particular issue throughout the state. And there, you know, obviously on Channel 7, you featured it in the paper. What is your perspective, Amy, on that particular epidemic here in central Wisconsin?
Well, I think it's quite scary. I mean, I moved here 6 years ago, and when I moved here, it was the OxyContin trend. I feel like we had something, you know, about every week, every other week, where we were chasing somebody through the streets, following police, deputies, whatever, trying to crack down on that. Well, now since the reformulation of that, it seems like we've got, you know, what we would consider, quote unquote, a big city drug in our backyard now. And it is quite scary. And it's almost like, how did it get here? You know, what's bringing it here? And, you know, we did one of the concerns that we had reported on is they have this way to treat somebody who may have overdosed. It's called Narcan. And now, it has great results of, you know, saving lives, but yet are we enabling drug users to push it just a little bit further now and knowing that, okay, well, I have this to fall back on, I'm going to be okay type thing. And it is scary. Not only is it heroin, but, you know, the bath salts over in Langlade County, that seems to be quite scary. We've talked about that with the sheriff over there, and we had, I don't know how many mugshots at one time of bath salts, people who were facing charges for bath salt use, and the craziness that can come of that and the effects that that has on a person, and with it being such a newer way for somebody to get a high, you know, we don't know what the long-term effects are of this drug yet, and that's a bit scary as well.
The heroin is growth of heroin is a huge problem, and
mm-hmm.
and Amy, I think you put your finger on it when you said that it came from the reformulation of OxyContin. That's what the law enforcement
mm-hmm.
and the public health people say led addicts opiates. It's
mm-hmm.
opiates, right?
Yep.
It's all the same, right? And so heroin was available. We interviewed State Representative John Nygren of Marinette, who has been a leader on this issue and raising awareness of it, and has spoken quite frankly about the problems of his daughter has had with heroin addiction. He said that in Marinette, where they build a bunch of ships, it's actually the epidemic is to the level that it's hard to find workers, young workers to work in these shipbuilding factories,
hmm.
and that employers have come to him and asked for him to take action on the problem. That's serious, and that's definitely scary. And so it was a big project this year, sort of realizing that the epidemic is real and trying to formulate a way to respond.
And Ken, are you seeing the similar types of things up in the Rhinelander area?
Well, you know, you think the Northwoods is a quiet, safe little area. They've had arrest after arrest after arrest with heroin. The bath salt situation actually hit up here a year, maybe earlier than it did in Langlade County. There were numerous people arrested in bath salts a while back. The heroin, there was a death up here about a year ago involving a fellow who had overdosed. And there's been numerous arrests of people with possession. So, you know, the safe North Woods, well, maybe not so. I think it's the same regardless. It just depends what community you live in.
So what can we do? So the one of the bills in the legislature did deal with this Narcan. Our editorial board was in favor of that bill, and a big part of the reason is because Narcan is it counteracts opiate overdose, but it doesn't develop a addiction on its own. So it's a tool. It's a tool in emergencies, mm-hmm. to save people's lives. It doesn't get you high. So some of the associated risks are, in our view were not present. There is a talk about issues for 2014. John Nygren and State Representative Scott Krug from Wisconsin Rapids in an interview we did talked about a much broader and more ambitious plan to revamp probation and parole, community supervision in Wisconsin to follow something closer to a drug court type of model, which involves a lot more drug testing and a lot faster punishments that are maybe less severe but come more swift and more sure, as a way of – it's sort of the model that a lot of drug courts and Marathon County's OWI court follow, and it has good results, but at the same time it would require a real revamp of the whole state's correction system, and so it's an ambitious plan that they were talking about unveiling some legislation early next year. That would be a very big deal, a very big thing to watch. And it's worth noting, by the way, that these guys are like conservative Republican legislators. You know, it's not a it's sort of interesting. It's not a partisan issue at this point.
Yeah, I don't see this as a political issue as well, because I think everybody wants to have these safe communities, and we all want to get this out of our own backyard. We don't want our kids running around the streets where this is happening. And, you know, we have the pushback against drug campaign that's really strong right now here in Marathon County, and, you know, all the brainstorming we've got going on trying to figure out, you know, is a drug court a good idea for us to implement here in our area? And you know, like we keep saying, we don't think of drugs as a problem here in north central Wisconsin. We see that as like Chicago, Minneapolis, but it is hitting the small towns, and it is something we can't just keep sweeping under the rug. We need some action and some help here.
You're listening to Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about the news stories of 2013 and seeing what's ahead in 2014. We'll be right back right after this. Welcome back to Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're joined by Rob Menser of the Wausau Daily Herald, Amy Flutsop of the News Channel 7, WSAW-TV, and Ken Krall from WXPR in Rhinelander. Let's look ahead at 2014, and Amy, we'll start with you to see what stories are you going to be following in the coming year. Obviously, the elections coming up is a big one, but what do you see as a potentially big story for 2014?
Well, obviously, I think one of the big things I get asked all the time is, do you think Governor Walker is going to run for president? I mean, you know, my family back in Indiana asked me that, too. When I go home, everybody there wants to know. Everybody knows who he is now. And, you know, I think it's, you know, whether he does or not, I think he, you know.
Do you think he might?
I don't know. What do you think, Rob?
Yes, clearly, yes. Obviously.
But, you know, whether he does or doesn't, I think he may have the – this may be the time for him to try to throw his hat in the ring and see what he can do, because, like I said, everybody knows who he is. And I find it quite funny, too, is that, you know, everybody called for the recall for him and he survived. So maybe he has the power to do it. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see.
Ken, what about you?
One of the issues I think that will be coming up next year is off-reservation gaming. And as I was counting here, we have about three gambling casinos within just a few miles of where I am, and if you go out to the peripheral, there's seven or eight. And one of the Forest County Pottawatomie community is against expanded off-gaming, off-reservation gaming, and the Lac des Flambeaux tribe, the other way from us, is in favor of it, because they, too, would like to put a casino down at Schulzburg. So So it's going to become, that's an issue, I think, that it sort of simmered this year, but I think will come to the forefront, especially as Governor Walker makes a decision on the new casino down in Kenosha. So that's one that I'm going to be keeping an eye on in the next year, along, of course, with the mining issues.
Rob?
The economy, I mean, the economy appears to be sort of sputtering, right, at the moment. Now, I don't think anyone thinks, or most economists don't predict, that the U.S. is about to go into recession. But the growth, Wisconsin's growth relative to other Midwestern states is going to play into how people perceive Governor Walker's performance as he heads into a reelection bid. And honestly, it's not just politics. It just affects what type of problems the community sees. You know, the issue of long-term unemployed now are going to lose their unemployment benefits in a matter of a week or something if Congress doesn't do anything. And we've already seen this year social services agencies here, like the Neighbor's Place, others, that have seen just a steady increase, like the recession was still going strong. And it's because of this population of sort of long-term unemployed who just run out of other options. If they lose unemployment benefits at the beginning of the year, that's going to have a huge impact. It's going to skyrocket those things.
Well, in the north too, with unemployment, it's much higher up where you're at than where we are or elsewhere in the state. Is that correct?
That's absolutely true. We've had, in fact, up until just a couple of months ago, it was double digit up here for almost a year or more, and it's stayed stubbornly high. There are parts of the state now that are back to pre-recession levels as far as unemployment. We're nowhere near that. And jobs are tough up here. It's hard to find a job if you're out looking right now. And I agree with Rob. I think that is going to become an issue. It's kind of the quiet issue that most people kind of go along every day with the way it is. But the economy is far from good.
And also, one of the things you're dealing with, and I think to a lot of some extent here in central Wisconsin, are the changing demographics overall, with the north is growing older.
Much older. I'm doing this from memory, so it may not be 100%, but I believe Oneida County was the first county in Wisconsin to have more people over the age of 55 than under the age of 5. So in other words, this is a very older demographic up here. We're going to need more medical services and things that go along with that. And the question then comes, how do you build an economy on retired people? And that's, I know, been talked about up here a lot in some of the offices. So it's an issue that, it's not an easy issue to overcome.
And Rob, one of the things that I know the Daily Herald and the Gannett group has been focusing on this past year, and I foresee it increasing, is open records, open government. You take a look at, from a local level, the Thomas Street situation here in Wausau, or the West Side Beautification Project in the Wausau School District. But where do you see the open government, the open records requests going in the year ahead?
Oh, you know, I mean, it's mixed as it always is, right? Because we sort of see it as our role to push for openness as members of the media and transparency in government. And I actually argue, government people don't agree with me on this, but I actually argue that it ultimately is better for them to just sort of have it out, let people be transparent, let people make what they will of it, and if there's criticisms, then respond to the criticisms and sort of deal with them as they come. But it's just hard because I think that sometimes people who are making decisions feel besieged, they feel attacked, and they take a sort of defensive posture, and that involves trying to cover up, maybe divert from public attention some stuff that we sometimes in the media, sometimes the public at large, think deserves attention.
And Amy, how do you reflect on that with respect to television and covering those similar issues?
I think it's the same issue. I think our viewers they want to know. And I think if they feel informed, you know, of course our viewers are going to have their own opinions too. It may not be the same as what these government leaders or people in charge may want to hear. But as Rob said, I think if people are feeling, you know, they know what's going on, and it kind of lessens the controversy. And just like going back to the Wausau School District, where the rumors don't start swirling, and, you know, there's this malicious attack and all this kind of thing going on. So I think if our viewers feel well informed, I think it'll create a better atmosphere.
And that's going to wrap it up for today. Thank you so much. Amy Flugstock from Channel 7. Pardon me
for
that.
You almost made it the whole way. All this time, you messed up on the last one.
Rob Menser from the Wausau Daily Herald and Ken Krall from WXPR in Rhinelander. I'm Rick Ryer of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our producer today, Glenn Mobert, for producing today's program, and our on-air producer, Jane Ritker. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme and special music today by Steely Dan, ELO, Hedgehoppers Anonymous, The Beatles, and Merle Haggard. Next Thursday, we'll be talking about the jail ministry program in Marathon County, revisiting that program with the special challenges this season brings for the people who have spending their holiday times behind bars. Route 51 can be heard every Thursday at 10 a.m. and on the Ideas Network stations, 91.9 WLBL in Auburndale and Stevens Point, WHBM Park Falls, WHAA Adams, Wisconsin Rapids, WHSF Rhinelander, Eagle River, and WHRM 90.9 HD Channel 3. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week, we're heading out of town.
Suddenly the war is over, that's the news. Suddenly celebrity, something back in style. Back to running tabloid for a while. Pain's almost everywhere, the whole world's got the blues. Suddenly the war's over, that's the news. That's the news, that's the news. That's the ever-loving, blessed headline news. Someone's missing in Modesto.